Here's Andy Udman.
You can't see it, you can't taste it, but some are calling it a serious health threat every parent should know about. Wi-Fi, wireless internet, is in schools coast to coast, but why do some kids say Wi-Fi is making them sick?
I just think that we don't know, so why risk it?
Today, schools across the country are rushing to install it, but these students say the convenience isn't worth the risk.
I had heart racing, headaches,
nauseous.
It's a really weird feeling.
Weak, and I'm really shaky.
And when they're not at school?
Does it happen on the weekends?
No.
So are you suggesting that parents should tell their kids, a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old who may be attached to his laptop or his iPad, you should stop using that?
It may not go over so well, but, you know, when children want to smoke, and if you're a responsible parent, you allow your 13-year-old child to smoke. In my mind, there's no difference between the two. If anything, I think maybe microwave radiation is going to show up to be much more harmful than smoking, simply because of the amount of exposure that we're seeing in our everyday environment.
You don't want to wait until you can count the bodies before you tell the public that there is a serious potential of harm. And with regard to the issue of Wi-Fi in schools, this is exactly where we are.
Wow. Wow. I've heard that clip a number of times, and I still get goosebumps hearing that clip and that warning. Microwave radiation, possibly even more dangerous than smoking. Good morning, London. The show is London Today. My name is Andy Udman. It is 10 o'clock on Thursday morning, and you know what that means. It means this is your captain speaking. Fasten your seatbelts, because Pam Colleen is in, and we're facing turbulence. Here we go again, Pam.
Oh, it doesn't stop, Andy. I mean, we need to watchdog over these things. They put these technologies, these products out in the marketplace, and then they use us as guinea pigs, and they're not doing adequate testing. So we need people like our next guest out there to come up with solutions.
But relax, Pam. We have Health Canada, and they're looking after us.
Oh, are they really? Look at how sick we are, Andy. It's called Health Canada. And look at how sick. It should be called Sick Canada.
We're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than we've ever been. And now you're going to tell us, and we just heard it in some of those clips there from 16 by 9 on Global, and we thank them for their setting this segment up so nicely. We have now had, I talked to the principal of a school in British Columbia the other day. I think we're now at three or four different schools across the country which have pulled the plug on their Wi-Fi system and gone back to hardwired access to the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think more and more people, more parents are perhaps doing some research and questioning this and using the precautionary principle in order to protect their children. So there is a lot of question with regards to the safety of these products.
And folks, I want to play you a clip here, if I could. I'm going to play you a clip here of a connection with cancer, Wi-Fi and the connection to cancer. Rick, it's audio clip number 6. There are a number of disorders that they are now alleging that that Wi-Fi signals. I mean, when you think of the signals in your home, sometimes my wife and I are having a cup of tea like on Saturday morning. We're reading the paper and reading some of this research, and we're thinking, how many signals are bouncing through our kitchen right now? I mean, countless.
That's right. That's right. And there is equipment out there that can measure some of this, but it's invisible. There's no fragrance to it. It's hard to know just where you're sitting and if you're a target for a lot of the stray electricity or what is known as electrosmog.
Well, let me play you the clip from 16 by 9 suggesting of a link between some of these signals and cancer.
Cancer caused by Wi-Fi emissions certainly doesn't add up with Health Canada's insistence that Wi-Fi is safe.
So you're saying that their science is faulty, or their analysis of the science is faulty?
Their science is faulty, and certainly their analysis is faulty. You can selectively look at literature, but there's been evidence for harmful effects of microwave radio frequency radiation for 30 or 40 years.
Why choose to ignore that? How does that possibly benefit them?
When you acknowledge you have a problem and you're a government agency, you have to do something about it.
Now, that is about as raw and cold as you can possibly imagine. The government not acknowledging that there is a problem here, because if they did, they'd have to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's cigarette science. You know, this is the tobacco industry was the DNA for what's going on with many, many products today. They know how to use language. They know how to buy science. They know how to use smoke screens. It's just another example. There's so many other examples where they have been remiss in not doing their own research and believing industry-funded research instead.
I tell people all the time, Pam, when they ask about you, I say what I like about her is she's very smart, she's very savvy, and she's fearless. What I don't like about her is the mountains of research and guests she throws at me, and you have another one this morning.
That's right. This morning we have a gentleman who will be in London next week at the Central Library, so I'm happy to say people can meet Kevin in person. His name is Kevin Burney, and he is the president of EMF Solutions and the publisher of two websites, dirtyelectricity.ca and emfsolutions.ca.
I take it he was invited by the Middlesex London Health Unit.
No. He was invited by the Central Library, by Margaret, as a matter of fact. So it's next Thursday, November 17th, from 7 to 9 p.m.
Kevin, welcome to the show this morning. Kevin, are you there?
I don't know. Have we lost
him? We're patient people. Kevin, I'm sure, is
there. Are you there?
There we are.
Hi, guys.
Yes, I guess it was the radiation that was harming the signal. Kevin, I appreciate you joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Andy.
Where do we start? Let's start with a question. How many signals? Pam and I are sitting in a radio studio. I suppose it doesn't make much difference. This building has Wi-Fi strong enough to feed the whole building with 60 or 70 employees tapping in. Should we be concerned?
The people who should be most concerned would be the people sitting closest to the router. The signal's strength dissipates with distance, so the further you can get away from that router, the safer you're going to be.
Just give me a moment, would you? Diaz, in that office right next to the router, you better move out of your office. No, Kevin, I'm being facetious, but should Diaz be concerned? He is sitting at about 7 feet from this router, which is feeding this whole radio station.
He should be very concerned.
Mm. Why, Kevin?
Well, the signal is electromagnetic, and we are electromagnetic beings. That's how we work. When you go to the hospital and you want to have your heart checked, they put pads on you, and they measure the electrical activity in your heart. When you want to have a brain scan done, they measure the electrical impulses in your brain. So these signals are interfering with your body's biological bioelectric system.
Now, Kevin, you have a history with being electrochemically, or what you would say is you're sensitive to electrosmog, I guess. You have a personal history in that, and then that's how you got involved in this. Can you talk about your story, please?
Sure. I moved from the farm to Toronto back in 1981, and I started working for a computer company. So immediately they put a video display terminal on my desk. And for the next 25 years, as technology evolved, I moved on to a PC. And what really set me off was back about 8 years ago when these compact fluorescent light bulbs were first introduced. I retrofitted my new home with approximately 16 bulbs. I also put in two or three dimmer switches. I noticed over the next 6 to 8 months I developed a chronic pain, sinus issues. So I went to my doctor and I said, "Doc, my hips are just killing me. They feel like they're on fire. I think I probably need a hip replacement, although I'm only in my late 40s. I received an X-ray, some more electromagnetic energy, and the doctor said, "Kevin, your hips are fine for a man your age. It's not that. Here's a pharmaceutical you should take to help with the inflammation." I was lucky enough to meet up with a neighbor of mine who's an environmental engineer who happened to be using this meter to test his electrical circuits, and he started telling me about what they call dirty electricity. These bulbs operate at a high frequency. Your regular incandescent bulbs uses your 60 hertz, and it uses it in a linear fashion. These compact fluorescent bulbs operate at a high frequency between 20 kilohertz and 100 kilohertz, and they put this high frequency energy back down the wire, and they also emit it from the bulb itself. So having all of these bulbs in my environment was essentially slowly cooking me.
And so what kind of, you talked about some of the symptoms that you experienced, but you work with people a lot who are, you know, sensitive to these this electrosmog. What kind of symptoms are you hearing about in the trenches, so to speak?
Well, yeah. Some of the major symptoms are chronic pain, anxiety, depression, dizziness, headaches, just a feeling of nervousness, of not being able to relax.
And then when these people take care of some of the electrosmog in their homes or their workplaces, what happens? Do their symptoms improve or completely disappear, for example?
Many times they're completely better. I've seen people who have been unable to work, and after 2 or 3 days they tell me, Kevin, my symptoms are completely gone. They think it's a miracle. They've been to all the doctors. They've had MRIs. They've been diagnosed with MS, and really what it is, it's all this electromagnetic energy that's interfering with their body's natural bioelectric system.
Well, the question that I have, Kevin, how, and I'm sure you've heard the story from a number of people, how do they ever trace some of these disorders to this electrosmog, this dirty electricity?
Well, the thing we do, Andy, is we get the people out of the dirty environment and put them in a clean environment, and their symptoms go away, within a few days.
Right, but you have to suspect dirty electricity, this radiation in the air first. You might think it's something you're eating or some disease that you have. How do you ever connect it to the compact fluorescent bulbs, for example?
Well, I was lucky enough to meet up with this engineer, and I added it up, and it all seemed to point to what I had in my environment. I was working on a computer every day. I had installed a lot of these bulbs, so I got a meter, borrowed a meter, and found out that I had these really high readings of dirty electricity in my environment, and I fixed it. I put in some capacitors, some filters, removed the radio frequencies, and noticed my sleep improved within a few days. My pain went away, and ever since, I've been out talking about this, trying to inform the public of this potential health threat.
Okay, Kevin, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you this question. This hypersensitivity to these signals, what fraction of us have it? And for the rest of us, do we just not need to worry about it, or are we all somewhat susceptible? And then we'll look at some cities in the world, like in France, where they have given the boot to Wi-Fi signals, not just in their schools, but in the whole town. We'll be back with that in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Cancer caused by Wi-Fi emissions certainly doesn't add up with Health Canada's insistence that Wi-Fi is safe.
So you're saying that their science is faulty, or their analysis of the science is faulty?
Their science is faulty. And certainly their analysis is faulty. You can selectively look at literature, but there's been evidence for harmful effects of microwave radio frequency radiation for 30 or 40 years.
Why choose to ignore that? How does that possibly benefit them?
When you acknowledge you have a problem and you're a government agency, you have to do something about it.
Enemies you can't see are so frightening because they're so close and so unreal. But if this is true, folks, think about it. Cordless portable phones. We have just in the last while, it's been like a few years now, I guess, gone to cordless portable phones. We have recently gone to Wi-Fi. Smartphones, reading tablets, smart meters. We've just had those installed in our house. Cell towers. Big one up on the hill in Byron. Bluetooth technology, I have that in my car. Laptop computers, microwave ovens. Kevin, Bernie, I mean, it is absolutely frightening when we think of even if a fraction of what you're suggesting is true. That's pretty frightening.
Absolutely. It's like tobacco. Pam made a good analogy earlier in the program, Andy. We were speaking earlier about how do you get sick with this stuff. Well, what it comes down to is duration. How long are you being exposed to it? Children are going through a process of mitosis. Their cells are splitting very rapidly, so they're more susceptible than we are. You probably never heard of peanut allergies, let's say 20 or 30 years ago when we were in school, but now they're quite common and you have to be really careful. So some people are more susceptible to this electromagnetic energy than others. Just like some people, you could put them out in a ragweed field and they would, their eyes would start watering and they would start sneezing. Whereas you take another individual who goes, I don't see the problem. It's not bothering me at all. So this it's very similar with this electromagnetic energy. Some people are more susceptible than others. It's intensity and duration.
Now, the question that I posed just before we went to the commercial break. What is the range of sensitivity that we as a population have to dirty electricity? I mean, let's take Pam, let's take me. She may have it. I don't have it. I don't know. How do you tell? And what fraction of the population has a sensitivity? Or are there some of us who don't need to worry about this at all?
Well, I think everyone needs to worry about it. Like I said, it's duration. So you may feel okay now in your 20s and 30s, but when you get into your 40s and 50s and perhaps you start developing these symptoms, perhaps you have cancer. So it really is. I'm sorry, repeat the question for me again.
What fraction of the population, I mean half, a third, three quarters, have what you call a hypersensitivity to dirty electricity?
Okay, well, dirty electricity is one component. So let's talk about EMFs in general, electromagnetic fields, which encompass the wireless aspect of it, as well as the electric and the magnetic field and the dirty electricity. Now, there's a study done in Sweden in 2001 where 3.1% of the population said they had a severe electrical sensitivities. There was one done in Germany where they believe about 8%. So somewhere between 3 and 8% of the population are considered extremely electrically sensitive where they have severe symptoms. Milder symptoms might be, you know, headaches, a little bit of pain, sleep problems. And Professor Havas at Trent University believes, based on her studies, that 35 to 50% of the population are suffering some sensitivity to EMFs.
Now, the World Health Organization in May basically stated that that this could be a cancer risk as well.
Absolutely, particularly with the cell phones and brain tumors.
Kevin, I want to jump over to this camp out there of our listeners who are saying, you know what, it's all bunk. I don't believe any of this. I'm healthy. I'm around cell phones. I'm around smartphones. I have a microwave. I have a Bluetooth. It doesn't affect me. You guys are just crying wolf.
Well, I wonder if you have a look at Steve Jobs and you know, a young, healthy man like that who's been around EMFs for, you know, the better part of his life and who died in his mid-50s. And I'm convinced that his exposure to EMFs had a lot to do with that.
Now, Kevin, can you talk more about the officials? What are the officials doing about this? Is Health Canada doing any hands-on research whatsoever?
No, Health Canada is not doing any research on their own. They're basically burying their head in the sand and hoping this whole issue goes away. The only meaningful study that Health Canada has been involved in was what's called the Interphone study, which came out about a year or so ago, which was a study that was flawed from the outset. Now, they were looking at long-term cell phone use, heavy users of cell phones, and links to brain tumors.
But Kevin, the show 16 by 9 took a meter, I don't know what it was called, a gauge that measures this stuff, into a school, and the readings were through the roof. And Health Canada looked them right in the eye and said it's not a concern. We'll talk about that when we come back in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
I just think that we don't know, so why risk it?
Today, schools across the country are rushing to install it. But these students say the convenience isn't worth the risk.
I had heart racing, headaches.
Nauseous.
It's a really weird feeling.
Weak, and I'm really shaky.
And when they're not at school.
Does it happen on the weekends?
No.
So are you suggesting that parents should tell their kids, a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old who may be attached to his laptop or his iPad, you should stop using that?
It may not go over so well, but, you know, when children want to smoke, and if you're a responsible parent, you allow your 13-year-old child to smoke. In my mind, there's no difference between the two. If anything, I think maybe microwave radiation is going to show up to be much more harmful than smoking simply because of the amount of exposure that we're seeing in our everyday environment.
Microwave radiation, more dangerous than smoking. Think about it, folks. The signals coming from your cordless phones, from your smartphones, from your reading tablets, from your iPad, from your smart meters, from your cell towers, from your Bluetooth, from your laptop. It's pretty scary stuff. If you could just hold that thought, I want to bring us up to date, our listeners up to date, on this campaign that we're running this morning, encouraging Londoners to call in with donations to make up for the money stolen from the poppy boxes. I want to bring in my operator and producer, Rick. Rick, where are we at now?
Well, my understanding is that we're over the $10,000 mark at this point. We've had several $1,000 donations, $500 donations, all the way down to $20, $25. I mean, it's been coming in all denominations, and people have been calling in saying, where do we make the checks out to? Where do we send it? We want to collect them here and send them along. Steve's going to make a trip later today, but we've had, and calls are still coming while you're talking on the air. The calls are still coming saying, what can I do to help? So,
and the Western Fair District called in with $1,000, and an hour later they called back and contributed another $1,000.
Isn't
so
that
it's absolutely amazing. Over $10,000. And if you've always wondered what Steve Garrison really looks like, check him out on CTV News tonight. They were into film part of that segment. Okay, back to Pam Killeen and EMFs, electromagnetic. What's the F stand for, Pam?
Frequencies. Yes, we are electrical beings. We put out frequencies. We are of frequencies.
It's absolutely scary to me because I have grandchildren and they're small, and small children are particularly susceptible.
Yes, that's right. I mean, we have to consider body size. We have to consider vulnerabilities with regards to even immune system function. We have to consider everything when we put out these types of products in the marketplace.
Kevin Burney is coming to speak at the London Public Library in just a matter of days. Kevin, tell me who invited you and why.
Well, we got a call from Margaret at the library, and I think that she's obviously a very wise and astute woman who's done her research, and I think she agrees with me that there's some serious problems here that the public is not being informed of.
Now, you're speaking on Thursday, November 17th from 7 to 9 p.m., correct?
That's correct.
And that's at the Wolf Hall at the Central Library. Just to make sure.
That's 1 week from tonight.
That's 1 week from today, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. But Kevin, where is the public on this? I'm trying to gauge our listeners. I don't want to tell our listeners, 643-1290, the lines are open. If you think Kevin is full of bunk, well, all these electrical devices allow you to call and tell him so. And I'm sure he's a big boy and he can handle that. Or do you think maybe he's correct? Kevin, I want to play a clip from the global television show 16 by 9. It just amazes me, Pam Killeen, that Health Canada is... Where are they on this?
Yeah. They need to really, take a stronger look at this issue, do their own research.
16 by 9 mm-hmm. interviewed a Dr. Carpenter, audio clip number 5, Rick, if we could, from Albany, New York, on this very issue. And it was just shocking to me that we don't seem to be able to count on Health Canada to warn us about issues like this, or even to suggest that they're checking out the possibilities. Here we go.
Across the country, these parents, teachers, and experts are saying the same thing.
There are children getting sick, and I don't think it's worth the risk.
I really hate sending her to school, given the environment that she's in.
Wi-Fi is toxic. It's a different form of toxicity, but it's toxic to our bodies.
He would often complain of heart palpitations or chest pains.
I'd start getting headaches, foggy vision, and like just all weirded out.
To expose my kids knowingly is very frightening for me.
For me as a parent, I find it incredibly frustrating and scary and sad that no one's even listening to the concerns of the parents.
Their concern? That radiation from wireless computers and this little contraption mounted in the hallways and classrooms of schools can make students sick. It's Wi-Fi. And Health Canada says there's no risk from the radiation it emits.
That's just simply not true. That's simply not true.
Dr. David Carpenter is a world-renowned expert in environmental toxins in Albany, New York. And he says the Canadian government is just plain wrong.
What we do is look at the weight of the evidence.
But that's what they said they did.
They didn't. The weight of the evidence demonstrates clearly that exposure to radio frequency radiation, the causes disease. The evidence is strongest for cancer.
Cancer caused by Wi-Fi emissions certainly doesn't add up with Health Canada's insistence that Wi-Fi is safe.
So you're saying that their science is faulty, or their analysis of the science is faulty?
Their science is faulty, and certainly their analysis is faulty. You can selectively look at literature, but there's been evidence for harmful effects of microwave radio frequency radiation for 30 or 40 years.
Why choose to ignore that? How does that possibly benefit them?
When you acknowledge you have a problem and you're a government agency, you have to do something about it.
That comment, Pam Killeen, just absolutely shocks me. And it makes me so angry to think that there's all this evidence, as on so many other issues mm-hmm. that you and I have discussed, mm-hmm. that the science just isn't there. And what is called science isn't science.
No, it's
at
marketing-based science. I mean, we've seen example after example of this from Health Canada, from the people who are supposed to be protecting our health. Over the years, we've seen them make mistakes with everything from, I believe, and we keep showing on this talk show, of course, is the fluoride issue. We see the problems historically with leaded gas, DES, thalidomide, Vioxx. There are problems with MSG, aspartame. We see a lot of questionable issues with regards to vaccines, and they keep holding on to you know these notions that they are this all wise and that they know what they're talking about, and yet they're not doing the research themselves and they believe industry funded research.
Those are very chilling examples you gave. Vioxx alone, I remember when, you know, one of the doctors in the clips we played earlier said, do we have to have a stack of bodies before we take this issue seriously?
No, we shouldn't have to. They should be doing their due diligence. They can't take these companies' words, as Bible. They did it with so many products, as I've said. And when independent research is surfacing, showing another side to the story, of course, the media doesn't really take hold of it. Government denies it. And unfortunately, we get sick for it.
Kevin Burney coming to the London Library a week from today. Kevin, we have just a few minutes left, about three or four. I want to give you this challenge before we let you go. I like lists, and I like to really boil these complex issues down so that people really come away with something that they understand and are motivated to act on. Let's look at the problem. What devices are the problem, and which one are you most concerned about? Is it Wi-Fi? Is it the cell phones? Is it the cordless phones? And then we'll look at things that we can all do to protect ourselves and especially our children. Let's start with the problems, Kevin Burney. What devices that we have in our cars, our homes, our kitchens, and as you said earlier, just down the hall in the radio station, to provide this building with Wi-Fi, what devices do you have on your list that we need to be wary of?
Okay, my first thing on my list would be these digital baby monitors that emit radiation full time. Okay, you buy these to keep your child safe. You put it 3 feet from your child, you listen to them. You are spraying your child with radiation full time. Okay, so that's top of my list. We've got skyrocketing rates of autism and childhood cancers. Second would be these Wi-Fi routers that people have put in their homes. And third would be the digital cordless phones. I don't imagine most people out there know that their digital phone, if it says DECT on it, if it has a 6.0 on it, if it's made by Panasonic, it's definitely a bad phone, and you should get rid of it immediately. We talked about the Wi-Fi routers. Laptop computers are a big, big issue, especially if they're ungrounded, if they don't have that third plug on it. The EMF is using you as a tether to go to ground. Then you've got other things such as you mentioned earlier. We've got cell phones, smartphones, cell phones. Those are on my hit list too. Bluetooth technology. It's a less powerful form of radiation, but people are exposing themselves all day long with these headsets, with these cordless mice and keyboards at their computers. So those top my list, Andy.
What I hear you saying is that we all have to move to Antarctica.
No, I live in Milton, in downtown Milton, but I have a very low EMF environment. I talk on a cordless phone occasionally, but my phone doesn't emit radiation full-time like these deck phones do. I've sourced out a phone that only emits when you're actually using it.
Now, okay? I know we need to be pragmatic here, and that is you're not saying that we shouldn't be using these modern technologies, but they should be rendered safe, correct?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You said
live in a safe environment.
You said the deck phones. You're saying, Andy, I don't care if you spend $159 at Costco to get four of these deck phones and you're so proud of them and you can page your son's room independently and it has all these beeps and whistles and toys. What do I do? Trash it?
Good idea.
But the companies themselves, we should hold them accountable. They're creating technologies because they're cheap and they're not integrating some of these solutions, correct?
That's right.
Well, okay,
you got to look at who's involved here. We're talking the Fortune 500 here: GE, Bell, Rogers, Sony, Panasonic, Motorola, Sylvania, HP, Cisco. Those are some of the biggest offenders.
Okay, I want to go down that list again because even Pam, and I don't think I've seen this before, Pam's jaw dropped. when you went down that list. This is the list of devices that we need to get rid of, basically. Baby monitors.
Baby monitors, number one. You should be protecting your child, not exposing them to radiation at a few months old.
Wi-Fi routers.
Absolutely.
Digital cordless phones, the Deck 6 on top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
Laptops. How do we function without laptops today?
I work on a standalone PC. Okay, I do not have Wi-Fi. Okay, I am all hooked up with wires here.
And cell phones.
Cell phones are big.
Yeah, but there are some solutions, that practical solutions that you can put out to listeners so that they can use cell phones but protect themselves somewhat, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, number one, you shouldn't be holding that thing to your head, okay? There's a fire coming off that antenna, to use an analogy, okay? And it's called the near-field plume. It's before the two waves combine to form radio frequency wave. They're in their electric and their magnetic state, and they're most dangerous. So say about 15 inches around the phone is this fire. So get your head out of the fire. So texting is way better than talking. I would suggest people who can and have the opportunity forward their portable, their cell phone, to a landline and speak on the landline, okay? Don't carry these phones in your breast pocket near your heart, because Professor Havas has done some research up at Trent University that shows that this electromagnetic signals bothers 40% of the people. They have a change in their heart variability. When you first place a call, hold the phone away from your head for a few seconds, because at that point it sends out a large burst of radiation to hook up with the antenna. So you don't want to have your head in the near-field plume at that part. Don't speak with when you're in a car, because the radiation bounces around like it does in a microwave. And all cell phones aren't created equal, so you can check out what's called the specific absorption rate before you buy. There's websites that you can get that information.
Wow. We'll mention again where you're going to be and when, because folks want to come and hear you, I'm sure, Kevin Burney. When are you coming to London?
I am coming next Thursday, and I will be doing a presentation at the London Public Library on Dundas Street, the Central Library, from 7 till 9 o'clock.
Yes, and that's a free event, so I hope the hall is full.
I'm planning on doing a number of demonstrations with these devices, and I'm going to go through them systematically and show people how they can use this technology in a more safe fashion.
Wow, we certainly need to hear that message. Kevin Burney, so kind of you to join us. Have a great visit to London next Thursday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Pam has something you want to share with us.
That's right. I want to talk about an article that was published in the Londoner recently.
Yes, I saw you drinking a glass of milk.
Yes.
And, I understand you're in a little dust-up with the Middlesex.
Yes, I've asked them for a retraction because they made a statement that was false and misleading, and we need to follow up with that.
Okay, we'll do that in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Okay, just one more thing we need to deal with before the top of the hour. You know and I know that Health Canada wants you to live to be 106, like the guy I interviewed a couple of weeks ago here in London. They're out to care for you, and so is the London Middlesex Health Unit. They work virtually 24/7 to care for you and I so that we're healthy and we're wise and we can pay more taxes to City Hall. Now, I'm being a little facetious, but that's what the Health Canada folks are there for, and that's what the Middlesex London Health Unit is there for. Right, Pam?
Well, you know, this is why they go into this field. They really, truly want to protect us. They want to see us healthy. Unfortunately, what's happening today is they make blanket statements. They take assumptions and spread them across society. And these assumptions are simply not true, and they're hurting us.
Okay,
actually.
Tell us about the article in the Londoner 1 week ago. You were featured in the article.
Mm-hmm. And it was about the raw milk debate. And there's a fellow down at the health unit, Dave Pavlicek. He's the acting manager of the food safety program. And unfortunately, he made a statement that is false and misleading. He said, when you pasteurize a product, you're ensuring that the pathogens are killed. So I very, you know, I sent a very respectful email in saying, you know, that's just not true. And I cited research to show that it's not true. I also said, not only do, you know, things like bacteria or pathogens like Listeria and Yonase bacteria survive pasteurization, we have thousands of people who've been sickened by pasteurized milk. So clearly his statement isn't true. So I've asked for a retraction and I haven't got one yet. Karen Selleck followed up and she's the
Who's
lawyer.
Karen Selleck?
Karen Selleck is a lawyer. She's Michael Schmidt's lawyer.
We had her on the air.
And she sent her rebuttal has been published today in the Londoner. And again, she's reinforcing what I'm saying. She cited an example of a pathogen that survives pasteurization. She talked again about the thousands of people who've been sickened by pasteurized milk. So obviously what he's saying is not true. This is all on record, but he's not coming forward and saying, oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. And I think, you know, as a professional, he needs to do that because you can't make assumptions today. And that's what they're doing is they're making an assumption here that they don't know the science, first of all, and that they think that pasteurization is the cure-all for dirty milk. I mean, that's what pasteurization is. It's an excuse to produce dirty milk. And he goes on in this quote to say that if you're consuming an unpasteurized product, there is a potential harm that a harmful bacteria are present in the milk. Well, you know what? We've seen recently outbreaks with problems with cantaloupe. We've seen problems with spinach. We've seen problems with tomatoes. I reiterate, we have seen problems with pasteurized milk. But we're not seeing these products banned, are we? We don't see them banned. They're not outlawed. So if they were consistent with their message, that's what they would be doing. And for those of us who want our rights and our freedoms and we want to be able to have the choice to go out and get raw milk, it's these antiquated thoughts, this antiquated belief system that raw milk joined the dark side. Well, you know, 100 years ago, that may have been true, but today we've learned a lot. It's not 1938 anymore. It's 2011. We have learned a tremendous amount about sanitation and hygiene and proper methods of animal husbandry and feeding animals. And I mean, all sorts of things have advanced in the last 100 years, and they're not acknowledging that. They're still living in the dark ages. These are people who are still members of the Flat Earth Society, if you will.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
There's a poke in the eye for the Middlesex London Health. You know, why don't they embrace the challenge and knock the ping pong ball back over the net instead of just...
Well, that's what I would, if they were being professional and open-minded, that's what I would expect of them.
Okay, we have 2 minutes left. Who are you addressing this to and what are you asking them to
do? Just asking for a retraction. I was wrong. And now that I've looked at the research, I shouldn't have said that. Pasteurization is not a cure-all. It does not ensure the killing of pathogens. I was wrong. It's just that simple.
It's
Dave Pavlicek. He's the acting manager of Food Safety. We have to get the science right here. We cannot make assumptions and hold on to antiquated science and belief systems.
So are you encouraging people who feel that way or have done the research and agree with you that they would contact the health unit?
Yeah, I know that they got other emails with regards to this.
Well, Karen
statement.
Selleck is the lawyer for Michael Schmidt, and she knows her stuff, and we have mm-hmm. had her on the air, and so she's written a letter in today's Londoner if people mm-hmm. want to check it out.
That's right, and so I would invite people to read that as well. And I'm going to be at a book signing on Saturday at Chapter South as well. So
what
if people
time?
Want from 1 to 5 p.m., and it's the Wellington South location at Chapters. I'm doing a book signing. So, you know, if people want to come and meet me, that's where I'll be. But I think that, if people want to be watchdogs over this, we need to watchdog over our health officials. We can't let them make these types of assumptions, and we need to move forward as a society because these flawed statements and belief systems are keeping us sick. They're holding us back from advancing with looking at potentially things like raw milk. What can it do to help people who might have allergies and asthma? What can it do to help any kind of illness? When 100 years ago, the Mayo Clinic used to have the milk cure. They used certified raw milk to help treat diseases like cancer, like tuberculosis, chronic fatigue, and so on. They knew that there were healing properties to raw milk. We need to explore that option. We need to do some research. We cannot stay close-minded to this.
Real quick update on Michael Schmidt. He is off. He's met with Dalton McGuinty.
Yes, he met with Dalton McGuinty. He was very pleased with the dialogue, very constructive dialogue. And so he's back eating food now. And so I think we'll just see what we can do to move forward here as a society so that we can obtain our rights and our freedoms.
Did Dalton listen on the issue of raw milk?
Well, he's saying status quo. He's saying we need to listen to our health experts. But as we've seen in this article, that our health experts are not always right.
Wow. Amazing. Pam Colleen, frank, savvy, fearless, and you just wish people would listen, but there is none so deaf as he or she who will not hear.